Welcome, everyone. Thank you for joining us for today's Appraisal Buzzcast. We have a great episode today. I'm going to bring in Hal, our host, Hal Humphreys. How are you doing, Hal?
I'm doing great. How are you, Jim?
I'm doing great. Well, let me bring in Marty today, Marty Wager from Wager & Associates, and we're going to talk about his new classes with Appraiser eLearning. Hey, Marty.
Hey, how are you guys?
Doing great today, Marty. It's good to see your face.
Thank you.
Marty, for those in the listening world for Appraisal Buzz that don't know who you are, tell us a little bit about your history in this business.
Well, I actually started, I'll be kind, in the mid-70s when I started. Fannie Mae was beginning to get into backstopping of mortgages. So I've been through a couple, three good recessions. Started out as a residential real estate appraiser, did commercial work for about 10 years. Licensing came in and I chose to stay in the residential field and became certified at that point. In 2009-10, I created an appraisal management company. Worked that for a couple of years and partnered with the Michigan Association of Realtors with them. And we participated together for a couple of years and left there to bring the bring an appraisal management system in-house for a large lender. And so I was chief appraiser for there for 2 years. So I've had a foot in just about every world there is. In 2016, I chose to stay in the business, but on a little bit less of a scale. So I am still self-employed or unemployed every morning, as they say.
I love it. I love it. You know, you did say something in your introduction that caught my ear. You've been around this business long enough. You've lived through a couple of, I think you said, good recessions. there's a lot of doom and gloom being spoken out there in the appraisal sphere these days. It's all bad. The sky is falling. Marty, you and I have both been doing this long enough. We've lived through a couple of good recessions in this business. Are we done for as appraisers?
No. And you and I both know. We've all said that interest rates are going to fluctuate. And how many of us have said values can't keep going this direction? If they keep going up and up, business stays where it is, nobody will be able to afford a house. The market takes care of that. It did in 1980. It did in 07, 08. None of it's pretty. But there's a reason people refinance. And if you have to bear with it. I think it was 2 years ago or last year, we did a session with NAA where we talked about don't panic. It's hard not to panic. My business is down. I only have a couple of clients, and semi-retirement is working when you want to work. And my business is probably 50% down. I'm getting half the orders that I used to, and most people I talk to. But it will pass. And as I said back then, my grandson, when I was railing about how things were, it said, "Poppy, you just got to learn to adapt." And that's, you know, you had looked at him and you know, you're 12 years old, but that's very, very wise. It is. Kodachrome adapted. Every industry you looked at reinvents itself based on how the market is. And as I said before, progress is not always forward. History decides that it's progress or not, and we have to stick with it because no, we're not done. They will always need someone who can read the market and read the tea leaves as long as they're going to continue to lend on properties.
I think that's it. And at the end of the day, my dad used to say, the market's going to do what the market's going to do. It's our job to tell our clients what the market is doing.
Right, right. And one of my favorite expressions is the market is not stupid. It is. You look to see what it does and it makes you frustrated when you hear an appraiser or a lender say something to the effect it's not worth that is our job to protect to protect the secondary market, and it's not our job at all. It's our job is to do just what you said. Understand what the market is doing.
I love it. Well, let's do this. I'm going to take a real quick break and give a shout out to one of our sponsors, and we'll be right back.
You bet.
LIA Administrators and Insurance Services, serving valuation professionals since 1978. We provide E&O insurance with a commitment to superior customer service, outstanding liability education, and unmatched claim defense, benefiting over 10,000 real estate professionals nationwide. Explore our exclusive appraiser liability education by Peter Christensen and cost-effective seminars designed to foster your growth. Our underwriters, with an average of 26 years of experience each, are dedicated to supporting appraisers. Visit liability.com to discover how LIA can safeguard your business.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to The Appraisal Buzz. I'm Hal Humphreys. I've got Marty Wager here with me today, and I'm particularly excited about this episode because I've known Marty for some time, and I'm super excited to have him teaching classes with us over at Appraisery Learning. Marty is working on two classes for us right now. Marty, your first class is on supporting land value. Now, I'm going to tell a quick story, and then I'm going to ask you a question. The quick story is I did an appraisal review one time years ago where this appraiser, in his cost approach, cited the land value, had no support mentioned in the report itself. And then in the certification, he said significant professional assistance was provided by the county tax assessor in determining land value. And as a reviewer, that kind of struck me as a very strange way to deal with that issue, number one. Number two, there were land sales available for this person to look at and analyze. So tell us why appraisers should take this class and what they're going to learn from this class.
Thanks, Al. Part of the reason for the class was the same frustration that you have in the position with the AMC and as chief appraiser. I did an awful lot of review work as well. And the frustration is just what you said, the lack of support. As we both know, as we all know, doesn't necessarily require proof of the land value, but support for the land value. And this class touches on the different ways, particularly with the URAR, when you're plugging in a land value, when you have people out there holding up their sum and say, what's 30% of 350,000? That's my land value. I was at a class, is another story, several years ago where a trainee raised her hand and asked the class, what do they do to keep their values, their land values at 30%? And the I know. And the air went out of the room, and she was politely told, it's not your job. It's your job to prove or support your land value. And this class talks about the myths of how you do it, the three different ways that are applicable. And if you were ever asked, how does the allocation method work? You said you used it. Do you really know how it works? We talk about that. And part of one of my reviews in my last year was actually it was I was a state regulator, and I had a person in front of me who made all kinds of adjustments to the land. But when I got to the land value in the cost approach, and it was a 50-year-old house, so the cost approach wasn't relevant, but still there was no land value. And she said, well, the land didn't require that. And I said, but you made adjustments for the land, which presupposes that you know what the land value should be worth. And there are a lot of myths. And the worst thing you hear as a regulator is the form didn't require it. And the answer to that is yes, it did. The form might not have required it, but you're required to do it. So there's a lot of myths.
Well, when it comes to the form in the highest best use analysis, the form says, is the current use the highest best use? Yes or no? If no, please explain.
Right. And part of the land analysis is highest, like you said, whether, and this class touches on a lot of different things. It touches on highest and best use. It touches on excess or surplus land. And all those things combined into one make for a lot of myths. It isn't excess land just because there are two tax IDs. It isn't excess land just because the lender says I can't loan on excess land. It's got to be surplus. It's not your job necessarily to make it so it fits the model of saleability. It's your job to decide whether it's excess or surplus. So there's a lot of myths. And I hear, I've been doing teaching for probably 10 or 15 years. This has been a sore spot or a method of interest. It's a fairly short class, and hopefully the person taking the class will walk away with a clearer understanding of what your job really is. Your job isn't to make it fit in their peg. Your job is to, if you have two lots just because they have two tax IDs, doesn't mean it's excess land. It's the favorite answer of the appraiser. It depends. And we go through all these concepts, and then there's four or five kind of appraisals that I or someone I know have done, and we go through the redacted ones to see how they were handled and how FHA and Fannie Mae and even VA reacted to the explanations.
You know, you mentioned in there that it was an older, you were talking about an appraisal. It was an older house, 50 plus years old. The cost approach wasn't really relevant. Here's the thing. Even if the cost approach is not relevant, if an appraiser develops the cost approach, it needs to be supportable. Just because the approach isn't relevant. I know some clients require a cost approach, even on older houses where it's not necessarily relevant to the value. But if you're going to do one of the methods of valuation, one of the three primary approaches to value, if you're going to do it, you still got to do it right.
Yeah, and that's a good point. And one of the parts of the PowerPoint verbiage right out of USPAP that say, if the cost approach is developed, this is what you still have to do. You're right. You can't just make it up and put it in there. So if it is necessary to do, it doesn't mean that you have to do it poorly.
I love it. Well, let's do this. I'm going to take a real quick break, and we're going to hear from another one of our sponsors, and we'll be right back.
Thanks, Al.
Need a profitable PDC solution for your clients? Jaro's appraisal management software makes the process faster and easier. With Jaro, you can order standard appraisals, inspections, and hybrids, all on one seamless platform. The software also gives you everything you need to manage new vendors by taking care of background checks and letting you shop from a pre-vetted panel of inspectors with a wide range of credentials. Get started with Jaro today at tryjaro, that's tryjaro.com.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to The Appraisal Buzz. I'm Hal Humphreys. I'm joined by Marty Wager today from the Wager Group. Marty is working on a couple of classes for appraiser learning right now. We just got through talking about the first one that deals with land value. The next class is about secondary mortgage markets. It'll touch on how it's functioned in the past, how it is functioning now, and what we can look forward to in the future. Tell us, Marty, what can appraisers learn from this class that will help them in their current business?
Perspective is the word that comes to mind. This is probably my favorite class. And as I began to develop it, as I began to see how the expectation for the appraisal is developing, what's expected, and I started going back over my history, and I think back to the 1980 SNL, and what basically this class is a history. I hate to say it's a history class because there are a lot of people who hate history, but many appraisers you talk to today have no idea where FIREA came from, why it developed, what was out there. They've never heard of the crisis. They've never heard of the Resolution Trust Corporation. And there's the old saying is that if you don't remember history, you're bound to repeat it. And this helps. It will help calm some of the nerves to say, oh, we've done this before. And there are a lot of appraisers who don't remember it. So this class goes over kind of from a 25,000 foot view over what happened in 1980. What's runoff? What are the different terms? What were they afraid of and what did they do? But primarily, it says, okay, after we went through the 1980 issue, what did the appraisal change? How did it change? And we talked about the different things that changed and the different things that didn't change until 2007-08. And all of a sudden we went through the 2007-08 and you look at the things that changed. It's an overview of watching our profession change and adapt. It's an exciting class for me to teach. I use some excerpts from the Big Short from the 2007-08, which goes to show how this happened, how the markets reacted to it. At one point during the class, we talk about who's at fault, and the answer to that is everybody. You know, there was greed everywhere. There were, you know, no doc mortgages. It started out by the administration saying, for instance, that you know, we need to get home ownership up from 68% to 80%. There are a lot of different things, and hopefully the appraiser will walk away with, we've been through this before. And then finally, the last part, I've been taking more and more of the hours to devote to the last part, and that is the future, to see where we're going, what are they doing. Whether you like it or don't like it, the best thing to do is understand it. Why are they doing it? What are they doing it? Is it progress, in my opinion, or will it turn out to be some of its progress? Maybe some of it isn't.
I think realistically, a class like this is helpful in a number of ways, not the least of which is to remind the younger appraisers in the room that did not live through 1980s, the early 80s, did not live through the 2007-08 housing crisis, that, yeah, things are tough right now, but as we said in the beginning, this is kind of a nice full 360 right around back to the starting point. Markets go up, markets go down. They have done that throughout the course of history. Our job as appraisers is to analyze the market and tell our clients what's happening in the market today. And it's useful to have that historical perspective to keep in mind, you know, how things are actually working today. What is one takeaway you think a student will get from taking this class?
I'm hoping there are several, but the one thing I believe is just what you said. The market, by understanding history, where we've been, we now know that what we're going through is not unusual. It you know, the market's doing what it's expected to do. Property values had never seen a decline of 30%. Even 1980, they didn't go down that much. They more or less planed. But to understand that that it's doing what it's supposed to doing should calm the nerves a little bit. To understand better is you know, it's most important for somebody to understand what they're afraid of. Yeah. And if you're afraid of where we're going, to understand it is going to be better. And it's a situation where you might decide to do the new forms, you might decide not to, but to say, no, I'm not going to do them before you understand them is a mistake. So I'm hoping they take away some understanding and calm to know that, you know, this is not the end of the world. This is not Armageddon. This is just different. Kodachrome decided. Well, there are a lot of different quotes. One including, for instance, that said the market for copy machines is no one will ever have a copy machine in their home. That type of thing. And these are quotes made by industry leaders. IBM to Xerox saying, you can have that. Nobody's ever going to want one of these in their house. Computers was the same way. They told Bill Gates to go back and finish his education. There are many things where people spoke without understanding. So I'm hoping this class does that. It's a fun class as well.
I love it. And I think realistically for the analysts in the room, and I'm going to make the argument that a real estate appraiser at their very core should be an analyst. You know, part of being able to put the current market into context to take your mathematical calculations and put them into context is understanding what has happened in the past. So I'm really excited about this class, as I am excited about the land value class. Marty, cannot wait to get those on the books and scheduled. I'm going to bring Jim Morrison back in real quick. Jim Morrison, do we by chance have an anonymous appraiser question for Marty and me to kind of noodle around with and try to answer?
Sure, absolutely. So these questions are questions that come in from our audience members, either in the comments or the email set, comments@appraisalbuzz.com. And this question comes and it says, I previewed a home and estate for a recently deceased person. One of the adult heirs is a retired appraiser from another state. If this is you, what information would you want to see when we get the appraisal?
Oh, boy. Well, what I would say is the information I'd want to get is the address of another appraiser who might take the job other than me.
And my first thought was decline. We're both thinking the same thing. The only worst client is that is an engineer, who likes to have everything. That's not a fair answer. But.
No, it's not. But if I hear that there's an appraiser that's a potential heir, that's going to raise my hackles a little bit. Here's the thing. We had an anonymous appraiser question a couple of weeks ago that dealt with a topic that I just don't personally feel like I'm an expert in. This falls in the same category. I don't do a lot of estate work as an appraiser, so I don't really know a whole lot to tell you on that. Marty, do you have any ideas to tell this person what to look for?
Probably the worst thing an appraiser can do is shut his or her feelers out to information that's available. I'd want all the information that I can get. And maybe a clear understanding between myself and the client that I'm geographically competent and you're not. I'll find the units of measurement that are important in my market and take it from the information that you give me. But I still, going in with your eyes open is still always a good thing to do if you have an heir that is an appraiser. Hopefully they will look at it the same way that they would do reviews, which is an open.
And if I were talking, if I were the heir, if I were the appraiser that was going to inherit some property from my parents and Marty was doing the appraisal, what I would want from Marty, if he were doing the appraisal, is reassurance that I'm competent, that I know the market, that I have access to all the information. That's what I would be looking for as an appraiser who's about to inherit some property. I mean, look, I'm not going to appraise it myself, right? I'm not that stupid. So I would like for the appraiser to just reassure me of their competence, years of experience, that kind of business. But I'm really looking specifically for competence because I have a sister and we've had this conversation. The way this question is phrased, it says one of the adult heirs. So there's probably another adult heir in the process. My sister and I've had this conversation. We will not fight over money. There's a piece of property that we will inherit. It is predetermined that we're supposed to inherit this piece of property. And we've agreed up front that we're going to hire an appraiser that we both agree on, probably from out of that specific area, to come in and get geographic competency and appraise the property. But what we're both looking for is an intelligent, competent real estate appraiser with a good, background in the industry who understands the property type and can get their head around our specific market and give us the real number. That's what I'd be asking for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And if I did not decline the assignment, that's probably what the best thing I could do is assure you this is not my first rodeo. I've done this before. I'm familiar with the units of measurement. I once had a conversation with another state regulator who said that they don't mind appraise They don't recognize non-geographic competency. And as an AMC owner, I said, I get it. USPAP says that I can become competent. The problem is in the URAR business, I don't have time for you to become competent. I need you to be there before we do this. And much the same would be with an estate. I don't want to wait 6 weeks for you to become competent. I need to know that you're there already.
Right. Yeah. Fair enough. All right. Well, yeah. I think, Jim, have we answered the question to your satisfaction?
I think so. And our subscribers can tell us in the comments if we haven't, but I think you guys did a great job.
I love it. I love it. Well, do we have anything else we need to cover today, Jim?
No, we're really looking forward to Marty's classes. I'm excited to see once they get unveiled.
Marty, thank you for being here today. Appreciate you joining us.
Wonderful. I appreciate both of you, both Jim and Hal. Thanks.
And if we don't have anything else, for Jim Morrison and Marty Wager, I'm Hal Humphreys, and that is your Appraisal Buzz for this week.